Hello, fellow Redbirds. Welcome to Bird Fans Forever podcast number 61. If you've been a fan of the podcast and like our videos, a good way to support the channel is to like our videos and slam dunk the subscribe button on our YouTube channel, Bird Fans Forever, with the number 4. Also, go follow us on our Bird Fans Forever Twitter account to be notified of our latest podcast videos, and visit our website, www.birdfansforever.com, where you can find a list of our previous podcasts. Steve's on the road this week, so we just wanted to shout out to him for safe travels back home, and we're looking forward to having him back for the next podcast. We're excited today to bring our former guest and friend of the podcast, Dick Ledke, to help Bird Fans Forever interview today's guest. Our guest today played his freshman year of basketball at Washington State, and he remains one of the winningest players at Kansas State. But Redbird fans like you and I remember him best as former Redbird head coach from 2007 to 2012, taking the Redbirds to the NIT 4 times in his 5 years here. Please welcome to Bird Fans Forever, former Redbird head coach, Tim Jankovich.
Hello and welcome to Bird Fans Forever, episode 61 with Coach Tim Jankovich. Coach, thank you for being on. This is going to be awesome.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Episode 61, there's 60 people that went before me. I mean, how important can I be?
I had a hard time getting your number. We needed John Robertson, a mutual friend.
We couldn't find him, the old excuse. Yeah. You sound like our players. You know? I would have got up. My alarm didn't go off. Yeah.
I am a former player, Coach, so that fits me perfectly. All right, Coach. Our one question, first one always, how'd you get to ISU?
Well, you know, first of all, I was an assistant at Kansas at the time, and I got to say, Kansas is a hard place to leave. You know, there's a lot of schools where you're at as an assistant, and you think, oh, I just want to be a head coach, and I would go there or there or there. But when you're at Kansas, it's harder to leave, and I had made up my mind I was not going to leave unless there was a situation that I really would be passionate about and check kind of all the boxes that I felt like needed to be checked. And Illinois State, opened up, and they reached out, and you know, I guess I was soon a candidate, and you find out, you know, you're one of 2000 or whatever, you know, it starts out with a big pool and you kind of get your hopes up and it just kind of progresses. Just formed a great relationship with Cheyenne Zenger. I did not know him before, but it was just so ironic. We had walked in the same hallways 100 different times. He went to Kansas State. I went to Kansas State. He had been at Kansas in school. I was coaching at Kansas. He was from Hayes, Kansas. He used to go to games when he was a kid, and they were in our league, and I could go on and on. So we'd walked in the same, my high school, he coached football at my high school.
Wow.
Not when I was there, you know, none of this was overlapped, but it was, you know, just like, gosh. So we hit it off. I liked him. I respected him. The more I found out about Illinois State, the more I wanted the job, although I already knew quite a bit because Kevin Stallings and I had been good friends for years. And in fact, had been to Bloomington Normal, had gone to Redbird Arena. Actually, Kevin had me up to speak at a clinic back in about 95. And the real reason he had me, because we both wanted to go to James Taylor concert at Redbird Arena. And that was the reason I came. And so I saw Redbird, fell in love with that, loved the whole thing. We talked to Kevin all the time when he was there. So for me, it was a no-brainer. It was just a matter of, you know, I was really hopeful that I would get the job. And fortunately, it worked out. And it was just a fantastic 5 years for myself and our family.
I do remember, Tim, Kevin talking about James Taylor as his favorite musician. Is he yours as well?
No. But I like him a lot. I put him way up there, but no. He's not my favorite. But you're right. That's a great memory right there. That's a little scary. You scared me. You're frightening me right now. That's like 4,000 years ago. You remember one conversation. So, good God. I hope you don't remember much about me.
I absolutely do. In fact, of course, I've asked you a lot of questions. And I'm trying to come up with some questions I haven't yet asked you. I'm not sure I can. But I do want to ask you about Dima Odiakosa, one of the many great players that you coached here at Illinois State. But when I saw him at first, I didn't like what I saw. He, more than any other Redbird, it seems to me, he improved. And so how did that happen? And obviously you had something to do with that.
Well, you know, you're not supposed to have favorite players when you're a coach, and so I don't. But you do have kind of a basket full of guys that are really, really special. And I will say there's a lot of Illinois State players that are in that basket. But when I first got the job, I was told by multiple people, and I kind of trusted their judgment. And then I looked at the stats, and they said, you have to recruit over Dima Odiakosa because he's just not good enough. He played 1 year, and he redshirted, and the next year he averaged, like, no points a game, and he was shot 30% from the free throw line. He's like, he can't play. So I'm like, well, okay, so I'll try to get a junior college big guy, you know. So that's what I did. But long story short, when I first started coaching the team a little bit in April and May when I first got there, well, first of all, the whole team worked so hard. It was amazing. I fell in love with them day one. But Dima was an incredible worker, and I told him, like I've told a million other players that don't listen, that, like, Dima, you need to spend an inordinate amount of time in the gym. You got to be here every day, and I'm going to show you what I want you to work on every single day. And I know he won't do it because no player, they never do. But I've said the same thing to a million guys. And time goes on, and you know, our offices overlook the court at Redbird. You know, it's on the concourse. So every single day, you know, you walk out of your office, you look down the court. And I tell you what, you want to set your watch, you could set it with Dima during the day, every day, whether the lights are on or not, bright lights, not bright lights. He worked and worked and worked for the entire time that I was there. And as you know, if you look at the stat, I couldn't put him on the bench ever. And offensively, he was not a good player for a while, and I think it's one of the great it's one of the great stories that I've been around. He was a great defender, great teammate, great rebound, did all the little things for a year and a half, 2 years. But his senior year, if you remember, he turned into an offensive player and was runner up. He was runner up for player of the year in our league, and I would say he deserved it. He almost made the Grizzlies, brought him back multiple times. He almost made the Grizzlies. One of the hardest working guys. I love Dima with all my heart. Although I will tell you this quick story. He does owe me about 10 years of my life because it was late July. So I'd been there for 4 months or whatever. And I had already loved his work ethic and all that. And our team is set. And I'm in Vegas recruiting. I'll never forget. I'm driving, and phone rings, and it's Dima. Well, hey, Dima. And it's like, Coach, I'm thinking about leaving. I'm like, what? What? In late July, it's July 28th, and you're what? And so I came home, and I was like, you know what? I got to spend more time. We've got to, you know. And we spent a lot of time together, and it was a great bonding experience, although I was literally taking a year off my life per day that he was trying to make up his mind. And thankfully he did, and I guess the rest is history. He's still playing, he's a professional basketball player, as he should be, and he's one of the best people, hardest workers, probably the most improved player that I've ever been around in 39 years of coaching.
And a fun player to interview. I got to know him, of course, I feel about him similar to what you do, although I didn't have as much contact with him as you did. You had contact with a lot of players, and I witnessed it at your practices and at the games, of course, but more at the practices. It seems to me you were unique. You had a humorous style of telling your guys what they should be doing, which I'd never really seen from other coaches. Where did you come up with that, and how successful do you think it was?
I think that's your perspective. I think if you polled the players, they wouldn't have thought it was quite as funny as you.
Well, it wasn't always funny, but you would come up with some great stuff.
Well, okay. I'm sarcastic by nature, so it's sarcasm, and when I get mad, sarcasm comes out naturally. So I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I know that I will say when I get together with players from the past, you know, when I'm lucky enough to see them or whatever, and they start telling stories, it usually is pretty funny that, I don't know, weird stuff that was said and all that. But, you know, I don't know. It's not something I'm necessarily proud of. But I will say that I learned, I was very lucky. I've worked for I would go against anyone in the history of the world that I worked for the greatest basketball coaches. I had the greatest education. Just look at all the guys, I mean, that I worked for. It's unbelievable. And I learned so much, but maybe one of the most important things is there's a million ways to coach. There's not a way to coach. There's not a way to communicate. There's not a way to be tough or not tough or whatever. And what I found, and I just became, was like, just be yourself, like 100%. Just be true to yourself. And then it's natural and it's authentic. And so for whatever, if you happen to come on a day where you thought I was funny, great. But again, the players probably wouldn't agree with all that.
I saw them laughing some.
Okay, good.
but you mentioned the coaches for whom you've worked. Jack Hartman, the guy you played for. Kevin Stallings, the guy you've already mentioned. Bill Self, Larry Brown.
Eddie Sutton.
Oh, right. Okay.
Boy Grant, Lon Kruger.
Oh, right. Yeah. So did you learn different things from each one, would you say?
Well, without a doubt. Yeah, absolutely. I will say that if you could quantify it, you know, the earlier that I was with someone, of course, the more I'm learning, because when you start out, you're kind of a blank slate. You know, all I knew was my playing days when you first start out coaching. So, and of course, I was with Coach Kruger first and Coach Hartman, and Coach Kruger was my assistant coach when I played. So I kind of knew most of what I'd heard everything there. So I'd already learned from them as a player. And I would say that, you know, that's where the whole foundation was, that it gave me the confidence to be a coach, was I felt like, God, these guys are, you know, Coach Hartman, Coach Kruger, they're such good coaches that the base was there. And then, you know, going with Boyd Grant was one of the most amazing coaches of all time. He doesn't get enough credit, but I was with him and, you know, I was with Bob Weltlich for a year at Texas, and Bob Weltlich was Bob Knight's assistant. So I learned Knight's, you know, a lot about the Knight way of doing things. I was with Gene Iba for a year. So it was the Iba family and Coach Sutton from the Iba family. And you know, Kevin was with Roy. And so, you know, one of my idols was Dean Smith. And so I just wore him out with, I want to hear every Dean Smith. I learned the whole system. You know, I learned the North Carolina Dean Smith system, because that's what Roy just copied Coach Smith, which, why wouldn't you, you know? So just everyone down the line, every single one of them, I learned so much and appreciate all of them and feel incredibly fortunate to, again, I think I'm first in the world of having worked for the best coaches. So there's my, and then having the chance to be a head coach for a number of years. So it really, I just feel very lucky, honestly.
We now want to talk, we had Jackie on in episode 50, and I forgot the number and I wrote it down and I don't see it. So Jackie Carmichael's been on and he's talked about what we call his bank shot three at the end versus Evansville. So we want to hear how you kind of drew it up. You put in Jordan Treloff in to make the full court pass. What were you kind of thinking, and what was your draw up? And And why was Jackie your number one target?
Well, I know that Jordan would appreciate you throwing him under the bus on the throw, but
it was a beautiful throw.
Throw him under the bus, okay? Because I have love for him, and I think he's a heck of a player, a good and a great kid. But obviously, you just threw him right under. But
he made the throw. That's got to be the greatest assist of his career.
No. That's the play. And I hope, you know, Jackie and I don't know if you remember this. Jackie and I went to the same high school. Okay, so we have you know a lot of history there. And the reason I bring that up is I'm hoping that he's as honest. At our high school, we like to be honest. You know, we're brought up to be honest. Anyway, the situation is this, as I remember it. Evansville takes the lead at the time when you don't want someone to take the lead. And if I remember right, it's their only lead. But anyway, I think there's 3 seconds. Is that what Jackie said?
We have the footage. We are going to show the footage.
This puts more pressure on me then.
Because the footage is going to be playing over us as you're talking about it. It's going to play over.
Well, I may be describing something that didn't happen, but here's the way I remember it. Of course, there's been a lot of years in between. The play was not for Jackie to shoot. The play was for him to catch it and spray it off, I think, to Nick or Tyler, I think. If I remember, because that's the play that I would usually use. You know, it's a common one. You throw it to the big guy, and the guards are crossing, and they throw it to a guard. And I think we even screened him. I think the play was, he was there on the baseline, I think, and we screened him out to catch it at the top of the key. That's where the ball was supposed to go, okay? I'm sure of that part. The screen, I don't remember, but I know he was supposed to catch the top of the key, and I'm pretty sure we were running what I normally do, which is the guards are crossing, and you try to hit one, and they shoot it, and you win, okay? Well, Jordan, and again, I go back to you throwing him under the bus. We practiced. He was our best guy. We would practice passing full court so I could see, like, he was our best.
That was my job. Yeah.
Long ball.
Absolutely.
For whatever reason, he throws a greased-up slider curveball. And Jackie, I'm not sure Jackie actually went to the correct spot, but I'm going to say he might have. But Jordan's pass was spinning sideways, and it was curving right to me. It was supposed to go to the top of the key. The ball is curving, like, right to me. And Jackie runs over to catch it and drops it. Now, that I know happened. He dropped the ball, and I'm looking at him. He's like 3 feet from me. His back is to the basket, and now time is running out because he dropped the ball, right? It's like, and he just turned and threw it, and I'm right behind him, and it's still the most amazing. I still cannot believe that ball went in. It was unbelievable. I would love to see the footage of that to see if any of what I just said was accurate. But that's how I remember.
And I have the edited version with the overlay of the video footage of Dick Luntke's call of it. So we've overlaid it on top so you can hear Dick calling the play as it's happening.
Beautiful.
And then, so it's just awesome. Because the TV guys...
Did he say how brilliant Coach was for drawing up a slide?
Absolutely, yeah. And this was...
Dropping the ball. I mean, it's brilliant to drop the ball and shoot a fadeaway turnaround jump shot from 35 feet. It's brilliant. What did you say?
This coach
has... I want to hear what Jackie said. That's what I want to know.
This coach has unique ways of doing things, and that was very unique. And I was as shocked as you were when it went in, yeah.
What was his story, though? Did Jackie say, is this about what he said, or does he tell it differently?
It pretty darn close. Yeah, there's a little things. I think he was supposed to set a back screen, if I remember how he stated it. And Nick was supposed to float to the corner. And Jordan was supposed to go all the way to the corner with it. And it ends up being a little short. And so that's how Jackie
gets... We did the back screen one, huh?
We did the back screen one, yeah.
Okay, so what I know as a fact is the ball... Was a spinning lame
that, yes, yeah.
And I remember him dropping it, and when he dropped it, I'm like, in my mind, I remember that's the game over. And you know, you don't expect to make it anyway. It's not. It's kind of a one in 100 anyway.
His first three-pointer, too. I mean, yeah. Yeah.
I felt so bad, not terrible, but bad. And all I can think about is if I'm Marty right now, I'm like, I the whole ride, bus ride back, you're like, because I've had this happen where you're like, why did this happen to us? You know, why do we get this one in a million thing that happened to us? And I swear, I could, that's all I can think about. I respected Marty so much. I think he's a great coach.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I was happy, you know, I didn't want, I'm, you know, wasn't that unhappy. But
No. Felt bad for him, but was still happy. Yeah. All right, so that was a very happy one. Love it. I'll send you the clip and the Jackie's episode so you can hear Jackie talk about it. He does an amazing job. Jackie's just class act. We then wanted, you told us off air a funny one that you're going to cover, and that is how much you hate Creighton with that overtime loss, right? And Doug McDermott, he's a 3,000-point lucky shooter. That's all he is. And, yeah, a good thing nobody from Creighton listens to our podcast, so we're not going to have any word. So yeah. Talk about the end of that game.
Well, that one was that was our last – that was my last year, our last year there. That was 2012, and we had a great team. As good a backcourt – by the end of the year, our backcourt, which is, I don't know, to me, was as good as anybody in the country. Nick Moore, who went on, you know, obviously at SMU, he was two-time player of the year. You know, in a league with Connecticut, with a league with Memphis, with Houston, you know, Cincinnati. And Nick was two-time player of the year. And, of course, Tyler Brown was an amazing guard. We had Jackie. We had John Eakey. We had, you know, Wilkin. Frenchie. We had a heck of a team. We got really good at the end. We beat Wichita. I think they were ranked whatever in the semis. I don't know. They were ranked 15, 18, whatever they were, and we beat them in the semis.
We were ranked 18th.
18th?
18th, yeah.
And now we've got Doug McDermott and his 3,000 points. I think there's been like five guys in the history of basketball scored 3,000. And the only story on that one is, it is one heck of a game. It's a high-level game. Guys are playing like crazy. And right, it breaks apart. In fact, McDermott hit a couple unbelievable shots late. One of them was a pick and pop and three, and he was so good. He was just so hard. We had good defenders, and we couldn't stop him. But they got a little cushion on us at the wrong time with about, what, a minute and 20 or whatever. And now we have to go into the press, you know, press and maybe foul, and, you know, you're behind. Catch-up mode. And it starts going pretty good, and we – boom, 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 boom. We're coming back, and all of a sudden, we've been in this catch-up mode for a little while, and we tied the score with, I want to say, 11, 12 seconds. And Nick Moore, who, again, Nick is as good a player as, you know, I've ever coached, didn't realize we tied it. He thought we were still down one, and he fouled on the inbounds, thinking we're still in catch-up mode. And you're just like, oh, my gosh, you know. So we sent him to the line. The game was tied, and they only make one. And we bring it full speed, and, of course, you know, nobody has more ice in his veins than Nick. And Nick – and we don't call, I don't believe in timeout in that situation. I just think you bring it at him, and that's the hardest thing to guard. Nick takes it all the way to the basket, if you can remember this, Nick. He takes it to the basket. He gets bumped a little bit and makes the shot, and we go overtime. But all I could keep thinking is those, you know, it wasn't like he got killed, but he did get bumped.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, Creighton is – got McDermott, got, you know, a 3-point scorer. They're going to the tournament. If you just call that, we're going to the tournament. Just call it, you know, and he doesn't. And we lose barely in overtime. It's a pretty painful loss. So, anyway, that sticks. I can still see the layup. I can still see him getting bumped. And there's not a call. And I wasn't, you know, I didn't, it wasn't like we got, it was one you could not call. It was one you could.
Right.
What was additionally painful is that you certainly expected, and a lot of people expected, that despite the loss, the Redbirds were headed to the NCAA. And and you were not. And
don't get me started on that because, you know, I've been at all levels. I've coached at the low level, the mid level, you know, what you call mid level, the highest level. And I'm here to tell you unbiasedly that the NCAA committee is just wrong the way they go about things. It's a rigged system. It's completely rigged. And I would say that when I'm at Kansas, okay, or you know, wherever.
Where you're in favor of that.
It's a rigged system against, like, the Valley or, you know, a lot of those leagues. It's rigged. It is. And it's very unfortunate. If you remember, we had an RPI 1 year of 31 and didn't get in. 31. Right. And we had a 39 or 40.
Yep.
You know, our second year when we lost in overtime to Northern Iowa, who beats Kansas, you know, that shows you how good our league is.
Missouri State one time had their ranking in the 20s. Like 26 or 7 or something?
4 or 5, right.
Was it? Okay. Yeah.
He was a really good friend of mine, and we used to talk about it all the time. He set the record, like, yay, I set the record.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Those aren't the records you want, but anyway, that is a... And again, this isn't sour grapes about getting in or not getting. This is me stepping back, retired, 3 years out of coaching. It's a rigged system. I see it every year. I don't like it. I wish they'd put people in charge that understand the animal and they don't rig it for the, you know, it's done. I'll just say it real quickly. The thing is already decided by December 18th, okay? The tournament is decided because all the non-league games, once you start playing your league, nothing changes, right?
Right.
We're all in our league, so it's all decided. And there's just no way, because there's no way you can schedule the way you would need to. They're not going to allow you to get the games that you want, and the fans are going to complain to all the poor coaches that, and they can't get the games they want, and there's nothing they can do. It's over by December. And the only way is you almost run the table, you know, and
the only way to get in is to win your conference tournament. Yeah. Yeah,
well, it really is. I mean, it's a sad thing because you watch when you do watch the NCAA tournament, look at the upsets, and you call them upsets, and they're not upsets. They're really not upsets when you're in the middle of this. It's just that TV makes it look that way. You know, they're the ones on TV all the time. So this is coming from a place coaching in Kansas or coaching. I actually coached at a low major one time. Well, Pan American was my first GA job. I mean, that was a low. People don't even never heard of it probably. So, you know, I covered the gamut and I feel strongly about it, but nobody cares what I think. So I'll just complain to you guys.
We care what you think.
We do.
Thank you. That's
We wanted to hit your second year where you make it undefeated through November, December, and well into January. So you said there's a funny story behind this. Let's hear this one.
Yeah, we were, you know, things had gone well. And we were actually ranked 26th at the time. We were the number one receiving votes. We're undefeated. It's like there's four teams in the country still undefeated. So we're getting some publicity. And our week was to go to Bradley and then Indiana State. That was the week, two road games. But we have a great team. You know, Chamberlain Oguchi was a heck of a player. Obviously, Osiris and Dima and, you know, Emmanuel Holloway. And you know, we've got a heck of a team. So the night before the practice, before we go, Chamberlain Champ can barely walk. And he's got back spasms, which at the time I didn't really know exactly what that was, although now I've had them, so I know what he was feeling. So we try everything. I mean, we try voodoo and acupuncture and, you know, you name it. And the next day he's feeling a little better. We don't know at game time if he's going to be able to play. He warms up and he says, hey, I want to try to go. And if I remember right, it lasted about 2 minutes, and he doesn't basically play. And, you know, he and Osiris were our big scorers, so
yeah.
We don't have Champ. And I want to say we lose by two, by three, by four. It's a close game, but we lose. So it's very disappointing. It's like, you know, I think we could have kept this alive. So now we go to Indiana State for the next game. I'm laughing now. It wasn't so funny then, my God.
Right, right.
And, okay, we're ready to go. Champ is feeling better, maybe not all the way, but pretty sure he can play. So, okay, we're better off than we were a few days earlier. We're at pregame meal, which, as you well know, is 4 hours usually right before tip-off. And Osiris is throwing up all over the table. So we get him to the room. We don't know whether he can play. We get to the gym. He's still sick. He tries to warm up. He tells me he is going to try. I don't even know if he played a minute. I can't remember. If he did, it was three. He was so sick. So now the week that we're, you know, continue this streak and get ranked, and we have, that's the week that we had, and we lost. Right. I guess you looked at, I think we lost close, or maybe overtime, I don't know, but it's like, what a week, you know, just our two top scorers out, and it was just, you know, one of those deals. I remember that. So I don't know why I'm telling miserable stories. Why aren't we? Because there was a lot of great, fun times, okay? There was a lot of fun, great, great, amazing memories. But you guys want to ask about the stuff that hurts so bad. I don't know.
But the fact that there were so few times that hurt so bad in your time at Illinois State is the reason you remember those. The great
was,
times, there were too
that
many
was a
of
good
them.
Save, Dick. That was a very... That was a veteran professional move right there. I appreciate it, too.
That's why Bird fans will pay him the big dollars. We just open up the...
Deservedly so. But and I take back a lot of the bad things I used to say about you. I do. I feel bad.
I'm glad to hear that. But those situations... How do you learn how to handle those? I mean, and how do you teach your players how to handle them so that things get better?
You don't learn to handle them, honestly. I think, if I could say this right, you know, adversity builds character. You know, they always say that. I don't know that I believe that. I think it reveals it. I think adversity reveals your character. And if you're made of the right stuff, And you just pray your players are made of the right stuff. And thankfully, I learned this as a player and then as a coach. Coaches take a loss harder than the players. Thank God. Because the coaches die, I'm telling you. Now, we fake it. It's acting. It's all acting. But a loss is murder to a coach. Yeah. And to a player, it's very painful, but it passes quicker. And I've always been thankful for that. So our players did not come to practice the next day feeling like I did. And I would try to fake like I felt a lot better than I did. But I am a big believer that for the most part, really, really difficult, you know, painful things do reveal who you really are at your core. It's easy to be, what a great guy he is. Well, yeah, everything's going right. You know, a front runner, you know, we call him... It's easy to be a front runner. Oh, he's so happy and funny and everything. And they just, yeah, but you just lost two in a row. Okay, now are you funny and are you happy now? Or are you screaming and hollering at your dog? You know, are you kicking your dog or what are you doing? And I just think that's, you know, character. And you just, if you're lucky enough to have a team full of it, then you usually have a really good season. And at Illinois State, gosh, we mentioned a few players, but God, I can just go down the list. Just guys I just love. I love so many of our guys, not just because they're talent, but their character.
Well, and the pain you experienced was more than offset by the players with whom you worked and by the good times that you had. I assume that you are so happy that coaching is what you've done for pretty much your entire life.
Yeah, it really, I cannot tell you. I'm at a stage of life where I was never, up until a few years ago, I've never stopped to feel gratitude. I was always driving towards something else. You know, I was never settled, never felt, you know, I was always trying to get some, you know, another wall to climb or whatever. But since I've retired, it's been great to be in a state of tremendous gratitude. And one of the things I'm incredibly grateful for, I wouldn't trade it. The great times, the horrible, painful times that you guys keep mentioning, you like to bring up and stick a dagger in my heart, and I'm sure there's more. But I wouldn't trade those, and I sure wouldn't trade all the, you know, hundreds of amazing times and the players. It's one of those. If you had your life to do over again, yeah, I would do it. Absolutely. Not even a thought, because it was an amazing ride and an amazing experience. Yes.
What do you miss now that you're retired? What do you miss the most about your coaching profession?
Just, you know, our radio show together.
Yeah, that's understandable.
That's
yeah.
That's number one on the list. I miss, there's a lot of things I miss. Being around the guys, just the whole team atmosphere. I love to teach the game, whether I did it well or not, but I love to teach. I love being, tried to be innovative and creative. That was part of what my spark to be a coach. I didn't want to be a sheep and just do what everyone else did. I was always trying to think of new ways to do things. And I don't have much creative right now. I'm trying to learn how to play golf, and that's not looking very creative, I can tell you that. I miss that. But there's a lot of things I don't miss. You know, it's being a coach is, I think it's difficult for the public to have an idea of really how difficult it is, how many hours, and not only just the hours, but the amount of time that it's the hamster's running in your head. And so I don't miss that. You know, the negative side of the ledger, certainly I don't miss. But yeah, there's just a lot. It's the people, you know. Yep. It's the people. Yep. And it's the excitement. Again, I'm still at a place just totally grateful, though.
The impact you had on so many people, that has to feel wonderful.
Yeah.
The impact on the guys you coached.
Well, and you don't always know that. Well, you don't. I never knew it while you're coaching them. And one of the most rewarding things is when, you know, even now some players will, they'll text you or call you or whatever, love you, coach. And it's like, you know, and it's, I mean, we just say that to each other, I love you, you know, and we do. And that sports does that. And that's a beautiful, beautiful thing, which don't get me on my soapbox about the state of college athletics. Because we're losing a lot of that. We're just going from town to town. It's not about the relationships. It's a transactional business. Well, you know, we all grew up in it's a relationship business, and that's what coaching was, and playing for your coach. Yeah. And that is your biggest reward, when you feel like you did have an impact. And a lot of times you don't think you do, honestly, because it's not like there's a sign on them that says, yeah, this registered with me. You know, it takes a lot of years for that to happen.
Well, think about the impact that your coaches had on you, and you had similar impacts on so many players because you coached for so many years.
You know what? You know what's an amazing? The this is in reverse, that I realize how powerful the coach is in an athlete's life so many times.
Yep.
Still to this day, okay, my my college teammates, I mean, I played 4,000 years ago, okay? But still to this day, we will call each other on the phone and imitate. That's how we start out the com. We're imitating our coach, okay?
Absolutely.
And it's like, think about who else in your life? No one. There's no one you imitate, and that you have all these lines that they used to say, and you can hear them saying them. But it sticks. It's like, and that's when you kind of, like, I really reflect, like, boy, the coach does have, I mean, there's a lot going on there in that relationship. Yeah. Because yeah. 40 years later, we're still calling each other and imitating our coach with every line. In fact, I have one friend, and we just text as many things randomly, a word or two words, still to this day, to try to crack each other up about remembering some just whatever about practice or a game or whatever. And yeah. I mean, that's pretty powerful stuff. That lasts yeah. a long time.
We call this closing arguments. Here you go.
Boy, I don't even know where to start. I thank you for having me on. It means a lot to me. I love Illinois State. During my time there, I still love it. I still follow it. I still watch games on TV. I love Redbird Arena. And it's always Redbird Arena to me. I don't care who pays what. Redbird Arena. Dr. Bowman was amazing president for me. Shane was an amazing AD. The whole athletic department was incredible. Our staff, in alphabetical, Anthony Beam. And Paris Parham, Rob Judson, of course, Rob's back there. Loved them all. Kerry Darting was amazing. And others that work for us. And then I wish I could mention every player, honestly. Boo was one of the great competitors of Slack, and Boo were, that's one guy anyway. That's one person. Yeah, that's not two people. But and you talk about Warriors, just amazing. Emmanuel Holloway, who was our first recruit, my first recruit. I actually got there and just started recruiting on my own before I hired a staff, which was a big mistake. I almost died doing it because I worked 20 hours a day. But Emmanuel was the first, and what an incredible young man. But, gosh, I could go through. I need to read everybody's roster. Amazing guys. I loved my time there, you know, and the fans were great. You know, we go back to when you ask, you know, why did you want to come or whatever? And one of the biggest boxes for me that had to be there was I was not wanting to ever go to a school where they didn't care passionately locally, that you couldn't get a whole bunch of people at your game, put it that way. And, you know, when we first got there, it was a little, I have to say, I remember I was talking to my wife about this not long ago. First couple games, I'm looking up, it's like, look, about 2,500 people in this big building, you know, and like, hey, Kansas looked pretty good. What did you do? And before long, boy, it was, you know, people were great, and the crowds were amazing, and I just have nothing but fantastic memories and just great appreciation for, you know, all the people I was lucky enough to be around, and especially the players and coaches.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you, Coach. This has been awesome. Thank you for being on. This has been Bird Fans Forever, episode 61 with Coach Tim Jankovich. John, hit it.
We'll try to find somebody up the floor. Brown, Moore, Wilkins, and Carmichael, the others out there for the Redbirds. Treloff looks as he is handed the ball and throws it way down the floor, and it's caught by Carmichael. He fires. It's good. It's good. And the Redbirds win the game. Carmichael hits a three, and the Redbirds win the game. Can you believe it?